This might be Cigar City Radio, episode number 64. I'm your host, Randy Ojeda, and making the magic happen, a man who's not the boss of me now, Mr. Jason Solanez.
Randy.
What you got, Jason?
I had a tea last night, and this is not a joke. This is actually a real thing.
Okay.
It might be the best tea I've ever had. It cured my sore throat. Do you want to know what it was called?
Oh, God. No, I really don't.
This is real, though.
All right. What is it?
It's called...
All right.
Which is a joke I used to make.
About, Yeah.
But it's actually a tea.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a real thing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We should move on.
Okay, fine.
You can find more podcasts at cigarcitymanagement.com/podcast. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any site that you find our name on. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cigar City Radio.
Our guests on this episode are the two Johns, John F. and John L. from They Might Be Giants, who throughout their 20-plus year career have released 20 studio albums, 10 compilations, 9 live albums, 8 EPs, 7 videos, and 11 singles. And they've done so much more than that. They did the Daily Show theme song. They did the theme song from Malcolm in the Middle. They're on so many soundtracks. It's like insane how much these guys have done and continue to do. They're like songwriting geniuses and might actually be geniuses. After meeting them, I might have to say that they might actually be geniuses. But I don't actually want to tell them that because that might get to their head. But yeah, they're really cool to talk to, really awesome guys, and still have like a really dedicated fan base. During the episode, you'll hear us talk about Thuggalos and hashtag Thuggalos, which the night of the show in St. Petersburg, their sold out show at State Theater. Thuggalos is on everybody's mind. Is that right, Kasha? You know, it's true. Like the people were like tweeting us like hashtag Thuggalos and sending us pictures from the show and everything. It was really cool to see how dedicated these fans are that like just, you know, an afterthought question in a podcast that they hadn't even heard yet. And they were already like gung ho and picking up on it. So that was pretty cool. And Kasha, it was your first time seeing They Might Be Giants, right?
First time listening to the band, first time meeting them. So first time for everything, really.
A lot of firsts for you at the They Might Be Giants show. What'd you think? Was it everything you dreamed of?
Very long, but I enjoyed every second of it.
very long, because they did 2 sets, right?
Yes. Yeah. It took like a 15-minute break. Yes. And I got addicted to them. Like, I've been listening to their new album ever since, so...
Yeah, so there you go. There's the glowing recommendation from Kasha right there. Their new album is called I Like Fun. It's available everywhere. You can head to theymightbegiants.com for more on the band. And this band has been, from the very beginning, one of the bands that's very good at the internet. And you can see when you go to their website and you can find all their free downloads, their Dial-A-Song page, and so many other cool things that they do. If you're not already a fan of They Might Be Giants, something's seriously wrong with you. So check them out. Here it is, episode 64.
This over here is
John, the guy with the glasses, but we're both wearing glasses now.
Yeah.
But wait, you have to reintroduce yourselves because I've already spaced out your names.
I'm Randy. Nice to meet you, John, and other John.
Kasha.
Kasha.
Yes.
So now that we've redone the introductions and everything, so They Might Be Giants. You got a new record out now called I Like Fun.
Correct.
Which, you know, most people, I feel like, should know by now that you guys like fun.
It's always worth pointing out that every song and every album title that we do, they're not just declarative statements of actual fact. We are working in the realm of the imagination. So, I mean, it doesn't mean we don't like fun. The previous working title of the album was My Murdered Remains. So what I'm trying to say is you shouldn't necessarily take everything literally that we title things, because
why won't you admit you've been murdered, John? Just admit it. come to grips with it.
And but the thing is too is that I guess we shouldn't take it too literally, because the album also like it's fun in a sense, but there's also, you guys talk a little bit about the apocalypse and the end of the world, and
it's work to listen to, it's work to make. I think that is a big part of what we do, is try and get people to enjoy what we're doing, and like we want to welcome people and bring them in, and then we want to scare them and depress them with our songs and our ideas. So that's the 1-2 punch of our work. We are a multi-service organization. We have depressing ideas, we have fun and exciting ideas, musical and verbal, and we're just trying to keep all the balls in the air, trying to keep it interesting.
And it's interesting. Well, I mean, just in general, your career has been interesting, because it's weird to find a band where it's like, okay, you guys have done music with Disney, and you've also like been in McSweeney's. You know, it's like, so there's definitely that. I guess I don't know if it's a dichotomy or just multiple layers.
It's just a range of it's a whole range of things that we like. I don't think of one as the opposite of the other. We take everything we have to everything we do. So it's all part of the big project.
That's amazing. And I've always wondered about like the Disney thing specifically in the cartoons. And you guys have done a lot of children's music, you know, like where did that come from?
Like a lot of things in our career. Even getting signed to a major, we had to sell a lot of records before anybody. The one thing we knew about major labels in 1986, 87, 88, was that there was zero interest in what we were doing. Like what we were doing was, some people might find it interesting, and it was definitely like getting a lot of like buzz in the world. And even on MTV, which was like very disconnected from the major labels at that point, they were willing to play our videos like we were a real band. But it was only until we actually sold a lot of records that we got any kind of major label stuff happening. And in a very parallel way, we made a kids record called No, which we kind of put together in our spare time while we were doing the music for Malcolm in the Middle. And it was like our kind of passion project, just because we figured we'd probably only make one kids record and it should be interesting and psychedelic and different than regular kids records. And then quite unexpectedly, it did impossibly well. It sold a lot of copies. And that was the thing that woke up Disney to the idea of working with us. I don't think it would have seen, if we hadn't already had a track record of actual sales, there's absolutely zero chance that they would have wanted to hitch their Saturn V marketing machine to our tiny rocket.
Yeah, it was a very unusual situation, because the president of Disney Records at that moment was this kind of rogue character who personally stuck his neck out for us and quote unquote, executive produced the record, which is to say he just allowed us to do stuff we wanted to do. And we didn't, I think, get the normal amount of neck breathing that we would have gotten from a thing like Disney. So it was an extraordinary situation. It was not a normal kind of a relationship.
It wasn't normal for them. But one thing that was interesting about the Disney thing also is, like, I actually had to, I didn't have to, I had the privilege of attending a meeting at Disney where they believe in what is the word? Not a synchronicity. There's like a business term.
Synergy.
They believe. Right. Disney,
so yeah. Like, synergy is the word.
I guess in Florida, everybody works for Disney at some point. They were really into this sort of hive mind idea of having everybody sit at a giant table and talk about. And they kind of went around the table like, Soviet Union style, and everybody explained what their big plans were and how they could help our project, which it was really awkward, to be witness to. It was like, and then it turned to the person who does all the Disney on Ice projects, and they were just like, they might as well just like, I got nothing.
although we were like, wow, never thought of that idea. Right. Like, that would be great for us. Right. Like,
they
can you imagine?
Giants on Ice. Sure, why not?
We get to stay home. There's people on skates. We record our voices. I'm on skates.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm surprised you never did that, that they might be Giants on ice. I mean, I guess there's still time, right? You know? So, but I feel like you've always been like a really forward thinking band in that sense, you know, where you guys have done kind of unique and cool ways to market yourself, you know, start, I feel like even going back to like, I think you just brought it back, right? The Dial a Song.
Yeah.
So for the listeners who don't know, where did Dial a Song come from?
Dial a Song was like the original, you know, the first thing probably a lot of people ever heard about us was that we had, before we'd really played many shows out, you know, outside of our garage, we had a answering machine, which again, do I have to explain what an answering machine is? It's like what voicemail used to be, a machine that you'd plug into the wall and someone would call and the machine would pick up instead of your phone. And we had cassettes. It was a cassette run machine. So you'd have cassettes of different, they might be Giants songs. We'd swap in and out and change them every day. And we advertised it in all sorts of ways. And it became this popular thing for people who were obviously didn't want to leave their house or they were bored at work or whatever. It was this local New York thing, but it spread beyond New York as well. And then it was also the clearinghouse for all our demos and idea, everything we did, we started, it began its life on Dial a Song and then eventually might wind up in the live show or on a recording if it was good enough, you know. And that continued for, I don't know, 10 years or something. And then eventually there was this combination of the technology was failing, you know, the machines were breaking down, we couldn't get them repaired and we were distracted by other things. So it wasn't really until recently that we've revived this thing. Now that there's another way you can get music in your home, which they invented in the interim for us.
What could that be?
That was the internet. So we were very lucky. In a way, you know, Dial a Song suddenly became much more easy. And of course there still are all sorts of, are we running the phone line this year? So you can still call the number and listen to our song on a telephone if you want, which is, you know, a very direct personal connection to us. But you can also go online and listen to it, and there's all sorts of ways you can hear it. We're putting out a song every week this year as part of this 2018 version of Dial a Song.
That sounds like a lot of songs to put together, you know, but for you guys, I feel like you have this, like, there's certain people that have this like innate, like songwriter gene where you can just write songs and write songs.
Yeah. The other day, or a couple weeks ago, I was actually looking up Guided by Voices and checking out what like they've been doing recently. Uh-huh. And I have to say, my first response was like, these guys are nuts. You know, and then I realized that, like, from, you know, from any casual distance, anyone looking at They Might Be Giants as a project would just be like, have the exact same response. Yeah. You know, like, it's hard to say, you know, what the point of it is. It doesn't really garner you more respect. I think 10 people sometimes are suspicious that the quality of what we're doing might be extremely low, yeah, which is
diluting the greatness of our early work by continuing to write. Yeah. Pointless new songs.
Yeah. So it's hard to say. I mean, in some ways I feel like, you know, we've been doing this for so long, we've just kind of, you know, we were never particularly preoccupied with notions of like, you know, like personal cool in some ultimate way. I mean, you know, we're completely pretentious people by any standard, but I would say that it doesn't necessarily, you know, they're sort of different, you know, axes by which people want to like be understood. You know, I mean, I feel like we do want to be understood. We want people to think we're cool, but we don't want to have to like pretend we're cooler than we are. I mean, just circling back to the kids thing. Like, I remember reading somebody saying about the kids stuff is like, the problem with doing kids stuff is you can't go back. I appreciate that idea in a way, but I mean, because once you do, you've already, you know, you're just like, we're officially nice, you know, and that is so antithetical to everything about rock music. But ultimately, I feel like the thing about They Might Be Giants is that everything we do is kind of antithetical to like the sort of the swagger at permanent adolescent thing.
We are a self-sabotaging organization.
Yeah. And whatever, I mean, maybe that's a smart way to be, but you know, I mean, I don't know. Somehow, like we're in our, you know, late 50s. Like it feels some things the adolescent stuff of it often feels very age inappropriate to us, you know? So it's like, it's not like,
but it did when we were in our 20s too.
Right. I mean, we started the band as adults. So it's like, you know, we were like, you know, basically, you know, I mean, we weren't old by any stretch, but we were not teenagers, which is what I guess where a lot of people start. I don't know. I'm just rattling on that.
And it's interesting because, like, I grew up in the generation that grew up watching Malcolm in the Middle, you know? So, like, that's how I heard about They Might Be Giants, you know, it was through the theme song. And you guys had obviously a lot of music throughout the show,
right,
you know? Yeah. So do you feel like now maybe you're seeing this audience that's finding you as an adult band, you know, and after hearing you, you know, through cartoons or something like
that? That's definitely been a thing that's been going on. We in the early 90s, had some of our songs on Tiny Toons. So there were people who were kids who were introduced to us then. And then subsequently, obviously, we've done kids records throughout the 2000s, the aughts, whatever you call them. And now those people are starting to age up into concert going age. So it's been a continual thing. We have like, we are just farming humans all the way along.
So that's what you learn from Disney, is you got to get them young and then get them interested from there, you know, from the beginning.
We didn't learn anything from Disney. We learned how to cash a check from Disney. But yeah, I guess the thing is, it's like, in a lot of ways, I get the feeling like They Might Be Giants as an idea is a lot of people's other, like the other thing they like, you know, like most, you know, it's like you know, people who are really into like, you know, Rage Against the Machine are really into, you know, some other genre of music might be a much bigger persuader. And then for them, like, and it's like how they dress or how, like, you know, like the things that they really pay attention to. And then, like, because they were raised on They Might Be Giants, we're just kind of like this other thing. I mean, I think that our relationship to the music scene is almost tangential in some ways.
Would anyone mind if I open a window?
Let's
see how noisy it is, because I feel like the
robot arm is coming down.
The level of oxygen,
giant slab of glass.
That's not too bad.
No, that's fine. Yeah, we can get that out in post, and we're gonna get a little. We're gonna. That's the magic of the windows opening. So, you know what's interesting today is, I don't know if you guys know about Gasparilla. Are you guys familiar with this?
I don't know about that.
So Gasparilla is a thing. It's happening right now across the bay.
Gasparilla,
it's a festival that the Tampa Bay does every year to celebrate the pillaging and plundering of our town. So everyone like dresses up like pirates and there's this big parade and
when did that take place? When was that?
It happened. Today is the day that
when was the original
guy, I guess in like the 1800s or something, like that's the legend, you know, is Jose Gaspar came and, you know, like, came and just raped our town and now we celebrate it. Now we're happy about it.
Caribbean thing of like, oh, the delightful pirates burning down your village.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
For Somalian pirates to actually come. And,
yeah. Well, that's what I always wondered, is like, if a pirate attack was going to happen, now today would be the day to do it. Yeah. So, you know, they even, what's funny is, I don't know why I'm going off about this, but we also had the Stanley Cup is in town today too. So see, it's a busy day. We got Gasparilla, not the Stanley Cup, the All-Star, the NHL All-Star game. Yeah. So we have Gasparilla, the NHL All-Star game, and They Might Be Giants, you know, the big three. Yeah. But they actually flew the Stanley Cup out onto a pirate ship, put it in a life vest, and now it's on, right?
I wish we could have been involved in that somehow. Like, we could have popped out of the Stanley Cup, maybe, or I don't know.
That would have been incredible, you know? Yeah, if only.
Yeah,
You know, 2 days ago, we were in Orlando, and it was Virginia Woolf's birthday, and Virginia Woolf is the author of a really wonderful book called Orlando. So I sort of thought, oh, this calls for a celebration.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt like we didn't really get a lot of traction on that idea.
Well, the audience was profoundly drunk.
They were like, whatever, I don't know what you're talking about.
The guy's talking now. I wish they played another song.
Well, I guess the main point of this story is that you will probably see pirate dressed folk in the audience tonight. So just a warning you ahead of time, because they're going to be there. The pirates are going to be at Gasparilla.
Okay, good.
What is Gasparilla?
Gaspar is the guy.
Oh, right.
The pirate.
I was thinking of like gasoline.
So, One random question that I've always had for you guys, and I guess just anybody involved in this, but I know you guys actually did the Daily Show theme song, right? So you performed it. Bob Mould wrote it. Yeah, wrote it. So, like, how does that happen? Like, does Bob Mould call you, or like?
No, the original Daily Show was the Bob Mould's version when it had, who was the host before Jon Stewart?
It was the guy, Craig.
Craig Thingy. I feel terrible. We can't remember.
Craig Kilborn.
Yeah, Kilborn. Yeah, yeah. So that was the Bob Mould version. And then when Jon Stewart mounted his version.
No. Our version came in before Jon Stewart.
Really?
They just replaced it. There was a perception that his recording wasn't working, which when they're always very vocal about things that didn't work.
to us as well. Because when we were called in, we did a lot of the fake news music that comes before the rock theme, and we did a lot of revisions because they were like, this sounds like local, this sounds like local news,
right?
And we're like,
national,
like, we need more than can we have another $100?
No, it was a good gig, and it was great. It was interesting because it was so faceless, you know, like having doing something that so many people know so well, and yet no one knew it was us.
No one knew it was us.
I mean, basically, our name was on the Friday night speed scroll you would have to, like, you know, video and slow down to see any single name.
And that sometimes would, like, get cut off because they're, like, already introing Stephen Colbert or whatever.
Right, yeah. And I guess now there's some version of the thing we did that's still kind of being, they've sort of chopped it up slightly to avoid having to pay us any more money. And it's, I think it's still us, right? Yeah.
I'm speaking now. So I was wondering, like, do you like being more of a faceless band, or do you like being up front, like on the, you know, on stage and like on a poster, you know?
As you might be aware, we've never made a point of having our pictures on the covers of our albums. Obviously, we've done tons of promotional stuff where we do use our pictures, but I think we kind of felt like it was a good idea for people not to focus too hard on how incredibly handsome we are, because it was distract from the music. Yeah. So, we didn't want to get caught up in, we felt like the music was the thing. And a lot of bands that we admired had done the same kind of approach, you know? So I think that was really the motivation. You know, I actually would be totally cool with doing a project where we were completely faceless. That would be fine. It's like, it turns out it's totally satisfying just to do good work and not have your have to worry about your makeup, you know.
I've just been curious about how a band like you can stay active and stay doing stuff for so long. You know, like, so many bands just like break up so immediately, you know, and like go up in flames. But I feel like you've been consistently putting out music for such a long time. How does that happen?
For me,
tell
there's two
John
things
to come up with a better answer than the last answer.
I have a better answer. Naps are the key. When you're pushing 60 years old, you take a lot of naps, and then you wake up and you go, I have another idea for a song.
But you know, it's a good question. I mean, friends of ours are like very into the idea that like bands should only make one album and stop. And I think, I think, you know, in a lot of cases that seems sensible. I don't know. We, you know, this is a very personal project for us, and we just kind of do it. And it's never, there's never been any like, you know, our train never really fell too far off the tracks or smashed into any great big wall. So it's just been kind of we've always had a certain amount of success that has made it easy to keep on going.
And yet,
and I think that doesn't happen. I think a lot of people find out very quickly that, like, it is over. Like, whether they want to keep on going or not, like, the world tells you, like, congratulations, your career has ended.
Right. And amongst the bands that you know of, they had some big amount of success early on. And when that stopped, when the momentum ran out on that, they felt like there wasn't anything else in it. Their expectations were too high. We never had incredibly inflated expectations for, you know, we're happy to play in this size room because you know, it's great to be that close to people's faces.
I remember listening to an interview with a guy who was in like a heavy metal band, like, you know, a pretty successful but basically a one hit wonder heavy metal band, and he was talking about like the idea of like getting in a van and going to a show now as like, as if it was like the most undignified thing. It's like, I'm not going back to that, man.
Right.
I'm not going back to Vans. And it's sort of like, well, you know, dude,
first of all,
you were lucky to have, you know, in the first place. And it's like, you know, it's just like, I don't know, like, what else is it? You're always going to be getting in a van. You know, it's just, that's the way it goes.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yes. Well, I mean, we've been in plenty of vans in the past year.
But I mean, if you can't deal with that, then you have to get some other kind of job. And that involves indignities of all kinds, you know, as everybody knows.
Yeah, the alternative to being in a band, it sounds horrible, you know. It's like, it's real life. Yeah, yeah.
Or it's just as horrible as being in a band.
Being in a band is a weird job, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes you do have, like, a lot of times you have to be nicer than, like, you know, you want to be. Like, your whole life happens while, like, there are people going, like, can I get my picture taken with you? And you're like, excuse me, I'm like on the phone crying with my mom. You know, like, you know, it's like, I can't deal right this second. But, you know, that's just sort of an odd.
I'm back. Because I've always, like, you know, asked for pictures and, like, do you find it important to be nice to people? Like, because some people are like, oh, I don't have time for this. You know, do you find it important for fans?
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder how much we get away with being assholes. You know, like, we've never really experimented. And I think John and I are both like, we have this neurotic need for people not to hate us. You know, there are a lot of bands that have totally gotten over that and have no problem making enemies.
We know a couple of bands who have a real zero tolerance for civility.
Yeah.
So it is there's an option. It's such a personal choice. I think you can totally continue as a band and just like be mean to everybody who's not in a position to do anything about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I'm just gonna start ordering off the menu now. Make it harder for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's nice. I mean, this sounds really wishy-washy, but it's nice to live in a world of civility and stuff. I mean, in or out of a band, I think it's more pleasant to have people be civil to one another. Why not?
Yeah. No, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think it helps that, like, clearly you guys have known each other a long time. You've been friends forever I didn't know that. So yeah, what is the relationship like between you guys? Like, do you fight over everything, or
it's pretty unneurotic? I mean, it's in some ways I feel like you know, it's unfortunate that, like, we, you know, there's so much professional stuff that has to happen, because it kind of makes our relationship more serious than it probably would be otherwise. You know, it would just be like, I think, you know, it's sort of in the way of just hanging out in a casual way, because we sort of represent our job to the other person.
But I would say we and the other guys in the band do a lot of completely off-road goofing around. I mean, it's a nice thing about this group of five people and our crew is that we like each other, and we actually sit around and just talk shit a lot. That's just, has super nothing fun. Nothing to do with the job.
It is really fun. The hangout part of just being on tour is actually very entertaining and very sort of thought provoking, and there's a lot of interesting conversations of us. Very, you would think we were stoned. They're so dynamic.
So, I mean, that's the bar, I think, for conversation is how stoned does the conversation sound
in a dorm room?
Like freshman year, just packing the bong repeatedly, stoned.
How come? Wait, back up. How? No, it's like that.
Well, I guess it helps to be on tour with good people. That's the key, right? You know. So, so what's next for They Might Be Giants? I feel like it's a big question. Right, but what are you?
The tour is laid out for the up till the till April, I guess, into April, and then we've got a long period where we have to write a lot of new songs to fill up the backlog of dial-a-song stuff, because we have not got enough stuff to finish out the year. So we're going to be hitting the ground running doing a lot of, you know, white knuckling songwriting. And then in the fall, we're going to Europe. And you had mentioned some proposal for another leg of the tour. We're
getting offers in theory from Canada, which seems seems like maybe the offers will just be very bad.
Right.
The future is unwritten. I mean, we're basically in a working band in 2018, which is a precarious and strange thing to be.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, you guys are, I think definitely held up by your hardcore fan base. You know, I was thinking about that on the way over here. I was like, what do you call They Might Be Giants fans? Is there a name? You know, like Taylor Swift's got Swifties you know, Bieber's got Beliebers. Like, what are the They Might Be Giants fans called?
Thuggalos, I think. Yes. I don't know. Yeah, let's make something up.
Thuggalos would be good. I think they were self-defined as giant heads back in the day, but I think that was just like, it's like Watergate. It's just like on everything. Yeah. You put a head on everything. Right. But I don't know if that, maybe there's something else.
I vote for Thuggalos. You know, I think we're going to have to get on the Thuggalos bandwagon. Hashtag Thuggalos. If you listen to this interview, hashtag Thuggalos, tag us and They Might Be Giants. Hashtag Thuggalos. All right. I love it. Do it. Yeah. Tag us. You know, all right. Any final thoughts for the Tampa radio listeners?
We were talking about the future. There's one, I should even say this, but I'm really excited about the tour date that has been proposed for 2019.
You haven't told me about this yet.
I you told me about it.
I know.
I texted you back.
Oh, are you down?
I'm totally into it. So I don't know, can we mention it?
Yeah.
So we got an offer to play in Puerto Rico, which is, we've never been there. Another part of the United States we've never been to. We are very, very psyched.
Follow us on Facebook.